Welcome to the Real Estate Unsuccess Stories podcast. On this show, we bring people from the real estate community to hear some of their struggles, pains, and even losses during their real estate journey. Our whole goal is to share these stories so that if you find yourself in a similar situation, you know how to work your way through it and head towards success. I'm your host, Cody Lewis, one of the managing partners at Vendu Capital. Let's jump straight into the interview. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. I have Charles here. Charles, thanks for joining us today. I know your time has been incredibly valuable to us in our chat leading up to this, but thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good, Cody. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. Before we jump into that, Charles, if you don't mind, I know you're over at Three Oaks Management. Kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you're at today, and maybe the types of real estate you're currently investing in.
Yes, absolutely. So originally, I come from Brooklyn, New York. The accent might give it away. And while I was there, I was working for a commercial real estate investor that was very successful. And I was fortunate to work closely with him and learn a lot. After 14 years of that, I decided that it was time to try something new. And at that point, I relocated south and moved to Charlotte. And then I got involved with multifamily syndication. So my partners and I focus on acquiring multifamily properties in the Southeast, particularly in the Carolinas. And we currently have three assets with 204 units under management, and we're actively looking to grow our portfolio.
That's great. Well, welcome to the heat and humidity down from the cold in New York.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And like I said, I'm really excited to have you on today. I know before we hit record, we were chatting a little bit about some of the experiences you had, and I know you got a really good one to tell us about. So if you wouldn't mind just kind of giving us a backstory around how it came to be, and then we'll dive into kind of the challenge that arose during the process.
Sure. So the one that I'm going to talk about here today, guys, is finding money and finding investors. And for anybody in the syndication space, or for anybody in any type of real estate that's not using your own money, this will probably be a pretty big one.
Yeah.
So it's one of the real big components you need to get a deal done. So initially, my partners and I were focusing on finding deals. And we had the mindset that if we find the deal, the money will come. Now, if we were looking at a smaller single family home, there's probably truth to that. But when you're dealing in commercial real estate with seven-figure deals, sometimes eight-figure deals, and maybe even nine, that's not necessarily true. And there's a few reasons for that. One, just by sheer volume and dollar amount, the deals are much bigger. So it's not as simple to go out, get a deal in the contract, and then go find somebody that has $100,000. So let's say if you're raising money for a deal where the equity raise is $2 million, now you need 20 people to put $100,000 in. So that's a lot more money you need coming in. Secondly, there's a lot of rules and regulations. So for anybody out there listening that's looking to syndicate, which means that you're going to have passive investors in your deals, then what has to happen is in most cases, you'll need pre-existing substantive relationships with them. And that's something that's required by the Securities and Exchange Commission, not by any operator. So there's definitely rules and regulations they have. And if you don't follow them, it can get very costly. Reason I mention this is because there's a lot of operators, I think, who operate with that mentality. And initially, my partners and I thought with our existing networks that we'd be okay funding our first deal.
Sure.
I knew a lot of people in New York that had money. They were buying commercial real estate. My partners came from more of a single family background, and they knew a lot of people that were active investors, and they thought they'd be able to get them involved too. And lo and behold, we had a mild degree of success with that on our first deal.
What is mild, if you don't mind, from like a percentage of what you needed to raise? I know we may not have to get into specifics, but for our audience, what maybe did you raise percentage wise with your kind of network of people you had initially?
So on our first deal, the capital raise was $2,150,000. We wound up raising $700,000.
So a little bit off.
It was. And truthfully, 500 of that 700, you know, came right down to the wire, and you know, we were very pleased to see it come in.
I can imagine so.
Yeah. So needless to say, what we quickly determined is the people that I knew had enough money where they didn't need to be passive investors in our deals. They can just go out and buy deals like this themselves. And the people that my partners knew were active investors. So in retrospect, it should have been clearer to us earlier on, but sometimes you kind of have to go through it and see. Mm-hmm. And you know, the people that are least likely to invest in your deals passively are people who are actively investing in their own deals. So that's an important lesson for everybody listening. You want people that, you know, generally they have some money. They're not mm-hmm. rich, but they have some money stashed away either in a savings account or a retirement account that's not performing or underperforming. And they don't have the time, the desire, or the expertise to run their own deals. So they're happier to give their money to an operator in exchange for a good return.
Perfect. So if you don't mind me asking, when you went to your kind of initial network of people, it sounds like, you know, you thought it was going to be something you're going to be able to raise pretty easily. What were some of the pushbacks or the challenges you found with your existing network to just get, I know you said you got to the 750, but what were some of the pushbacks and everything that you saw with them not wanting to, or not able to help you get to that 2.1?
So there were quite a few. You know, it's interesting. You hear from a lot of experienced people that raise capital that it's generally stressful. And I think there's probably truth to that in most cases, regardless of how experienced you are. But you don't really realize it until you're in the trenches.
Right.
So you know, what starts to happen is, you know, the thing is, for anybody that's a passive investor, it's not as big of a priority for them as it is for you. So as an operator, it's a bigger priority because you have the deal and the contract. It's your money that's essentially at stake at that point because you have all the at-risk capital at play. So for you, it's a big thing because it's your professional track record. For them, it's another thing on their to-do list with the other, you know, 3,000 things and the other things in their email inbox. So you have to find some way to help them make it a priority where they actually look at whatever material you send them. So what we find that works best with that is webinars, because it gives people a defined date and time to go look at it and get their questions answered. But some of the pushback we got was, you know, quite frankly, people just not wanting to tell you no. They tell you yes, and, you know, all of a sudden they ghost you. And that happens. Sure. My partner actually had it happen with a really good friend of his, somebody he's known his entire life. And they wind up talking again afterward, but it got kind of awkward because, you know, initially he was saying he would invest, and then as it got closer and closer to closing, you couldn't reach him.
Sure. That can be a problem.
It could be. And that happens fairly frequently. You know, it's interesting, but one of the things I noticed is how many people just don't want to tell you no. And it could be because maybe they feel bad to, maybe they feel uncomfortable with, whatever it might be, but it leads to a lot more follow-up and not necessarily the result you were intending. So that's something I would say is to be really cognizant. You will have people that do that to you pretty regularly. And you'll also have people that, just don't like what you're offering. They may not like the deal. They may not feel confident in it. One big objection that you'll hit, especially if you're new and you don't have somebody more experienced on your team, is that people generally don't want to be the guinea pig. They don't want to say, okay, let me be the one that gives my money to you and see how you do with it. They sure. want to know that you have some track record or somebody on the team has a track record and that they can feel confident about investing with you and getting their money back.
Understand. If you don't mind, for those that are maybe going through this process right now or looking to go through it, do you have a good tip or some advice for doing that initial reach out to your existing network, friends, family, former colleagues, whatever it may be? This is the first time that probably you're going to actively ask them for money for something like this. And it potentially, to your point with the example you gave with your business partner and their friend, it can change the relationship a little bit. So do you have any advice for kind of that initial reach out and what maybe is a good way to broach that conversation?
So I would give two things on it. So they're both going to pertain to lining things up in advance and not waiting until you actually have a deal. And that was probably the biggest mistake we made. So the first thing you want to do is you want to start actively reaching out to prospective investors as soon as you get in the business. And initially, if there are people that know you from different walks of life, you know, if they're relatives and they're used to seeing you at a family event, or if they're friends and they're used to having drinks with you, they may not necessarily take you seriously and see you in the light as somebody that they want managing their money. But you want to start reaching out to people as soon as you get in the business and let them know that you're in business and what you're doing and how you might be able to help them and work together in the future. And then the second thing you want to do, and this will be another topic in and of itself, is building sponsor relationships. Because the sponsor is going to be the person that'll have that more experienced track record And ideally, you want somebody that you can hitch your wagon to at the beginning. So you want to be able to let people know that I'm working with such and such person, and that this person has a track record in this industry, and this is their success. This is what they've done so far, and this is why you'll be able to feel confident investing with us once we find a deal.
Gotcha. Listen, that's fantastic advice, because I know, like you were talking about, this is a completely different arena that typically your friends, your colleagues, your peers, all of them will see you in this new light. And you have to kind of flip that switch in their brain and yours that this is what we're doing moving forward. And while I may not have all the expertise, to your point, having somebody that's a sponsor in your organization, on your team, you can lean on that expertise to give them peace of mind that, hey, we're going to be able to get this done.
Right.
Perfect. So again, I can't thank you enough, Charles, for coming on. I know, you know, time's valuable, especially these days where everything's digital and we're all in a bunch of meetings every day. So I really appreciate the knowledge you invoked upon me, and I know our audience as well. For those that maybe want to learn more about you, Three Oaks Management, what you do and what you're about, what's the best way for them to find you?
Sure. So let me give a quick plug here. So every Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern on Zoom, I do a free underwriting session where we underwrite an actual multifamily deal. If anybody's interested in attending that, what they should do is reach out and tell me they heard me on Real Estate Unsuccess Stories, and they can do so by text at 347-306-3278 or by email, charles@threeoaksmanagement.com. That's the number 3-OAKS-MGMT.com.
Perfect. I think anybody who's definitely in that space should take you up on that and watch that kind of process happen. Charles, thanks again so much. And for those of us here at Real Estate Unsuccess Stories, we'll catch everyone next time.